Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories. Good morning.
Hello.
How are you? It's me, Jesse, here for Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. That's this campus community radio station right at Simon Fraser University's Burnaby campus, broadcasting on the unceded territory of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, Stolo, Coquitlam, Catesy, and other Coast Salish peoples. Hope you're having a wonderful April morning. Today on the show, we're going to hear my interview with artist Rose L. Williams and a bit of music, a discovery from the archives, I guess, the CJSF's previously digitized CDs. I found an album written partly by a computer from 1989. So we'll get to that, and as well as a bit of a story of the deep dive of the rabbit hole I went down after finding this CD. Very cool stuff. But to start, we're going to do what I did last week, which is play a track off of my current favorite record. It's still the same record. It'll be a different track this time, though. It is Boy Genius, the supergroup composed of Lucy Dacus, Julian Baker, and Phoebe Bridgers. And we're going to hear this song, True Blue, from the record, which is called The Record by Boy Genius. True Blue by Boy Genius from the record here on Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. Yeah, great record. You should check it out. I love it. They're coming to town in July with Carly Rae Jepsen and Illuminati Hotties. Going to be a great show. I'll be there with my co-host, Jamie, for a co-host of my other show, The Vancouver Mixtape, which is Sunday nights. We play local music, not big popular music like Boy Genius. I teased at the beginning of the show that, which was only, I guess, 7.5 minutes ago, that I had made a discovery at our remote studio where we keep the extension of the CJSF CD music library archives. I found a record by the Music Society called Probabilities. And it's got a cool cover that looks like it was made by a late 80s, early 90s image editing software. It's got that classic look, very geometric. There's also some math on the cover, made to look like graph paper. And I opened it up, and it's got the tracks are all called probability 1 through 9. They're not in order. There are 9 tracks and 9 probabilities, probability 1, 2, 3, but they're not in order on the album, which also piqued my interest, as did the note that all compositions were created and performed by Stephen Jeske with the help of M trademark. M is capitalized and bolded. M is the interactive composing and performing system designed by David Ziccarelli, available from Intelligent Computer Music Systems Incorporated. And so this led me down quite the rabbit hole, discovering that M was the precursor to Max, which is one of the seminal software sound creation and manipulation platforms, and has been for 20 years now, since around the time of this release, since the early 90s, to the extent that the company that produced it has since been bought by Ableton, and the software has been incorporated into Ableton Live, which is one of the biggest and most popular music production platforms out there these days. Just super, super interesting stuff. Intelligent Computer Music Systems has since turned into a software company that produces the dynamic percussion system, which allows for when you're playing a game, for the drums and then the rest of the music to be sort of generated in real time and adapt in real time to change tempo, change mood, change intensity, depending on what's going on in the game. And I recommend going to intelligentmusicsystems.com and just watching. There's three little videos that are, you know, under 3 minutes each that sort of demonstrate this in action. I can play you the audio, but it definitely helps to be able to see. But just very, very interesting stuff to see how music created by and with computers has changed so much, particularly in light of recent advancements in artificial intelligence and what that might mean for this kind of music. As you can tell, things are getting much more intense. There's some wolves attacking now. Oh my gosh, watch out for the wolves. Just stuff that, you know, it's not just one track playing in the background anymore. They're all, it adapts to what's going on. Last week we talked about Mario Kart, and I played a whole bunch of Mario Kart music. Played Mario Kart music played by humans. So let's hear some music composed and performed by a human with the aid of one of the earliest intelligent computer music systems, pieces of software. This is Probability 7 by the Music Society from the record Probabilities. Oh, I should also mention this Stephen Jeske, Canadian, so some CanCon for you. Anyway, like I said, this is Probability 7. ¶¶ I love it. Probability 6 by the Music Society. Cool stuff. I showed this to music department coordinator and host of Vancouver, Connor Ashton, and he was very interested. So if you want to hear more, probably check out the next episode of Vancouver. Anyway, this is Jesse here on Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. And yeah, let's just get into my interview with artist Rose Williams. Rose L. Williams, excuse me.
Thank you for inviting me back. My name is Rose L. Williams, and I am a mixed media artist based in Vancouver, Canada. I'm originally from Montreal, and my roots are in Trinidad and Tobago. So I'm a little bit of pan global, I feel. Try to, anyways. And I put a lot of heart and soul into making my art. And it comes from a deep place. I mean, like most artists, I think we're all trying to say something about the world around us, you know? And my early years were spent learning natural science from my dad, who was an educator. So he was teaching his students at school how to dissect frogs and stuff. So we got to do it all at home.
But hey, that's a different kind of homework.
It was fab. I mean, one of my earliest memories is looking at our own drops of blood under the microscope, mm-hmm. and him explaining to us the different cellular structure. And I mean, I was really young, maybe 3.
Well, and you think about, like, you can look at yourself as the evidence, maybe, but like the impact that can have on a young mind to be shown something that is that profound at an early age and be shown it by somebody who you trust and yeah. who can explain it to you patiently and really allow you to explore it instead of it being like, all right, it's science class time and you're tired from too long of a school day and now you have to dissect this frog because you're being told to.
Right? You know, that's the difference between just an educator and a great educator. And mm-hmm. both of my parents were teachers and they were both great educators. And my dad, I mean, we had weekend trips to the Redpath Museum and McGill University, McDonald College, where we could see like the pregnant cows and stuff, and they had wolves, and I mean, it was all just kind of like fascinating, you know. There was none of the drudgery of learning involved, and it had a profound influence on my development, my little mind. And to this day, the work that I do as an artist is highly influenced by chemistry and the understanding of the natural world and how systems work together and all of that stuff, because my work is very environmentally based. So those are the roots of it. I mean, I was also a David Suzuki fan from very early on. And my other hero is Jane Goodall, because she's like amazing.
Yeah.
Her work with the chimpanzees and the youth and just disseminating information about how science is related to our lives just really inspires me. So I try very hard to imbue that into my work. And then as a child also, I had asthma. So I was kind of like, in those days especially, it was kind of considered you're being too sensitive kind of thing.
Right.
But I used to wake up at night with dreams that I just felt compelled to have to draw or paint. So in the middle of the night, I'd be like the 7-year-old, kind of like, I'd pull my dresser out from the side because I had this impulse to paint upright instead of down flat. I wanted to do something like that. I wanted to do something vertical. So I would pull the dresser out and paint on that with my little kid watercolors and then push it back against the wall before anybody woke up so no one knew what I was getting up to.
I think there's something very... You've been saying how your work is sort of this confluence of the biological, this sort of fascination with the natural world, and then this dealing with some sort of internal forces, situation, whatever, and putting that into your art. But then there's also this sort of almost ritual element, like when you think about pulling the dresser back and painting on it and then putting it back and then just doing that repetitiously. Do you find now that when you're creating art, is there still that sort of element of the ritual in it for you?
Absolutely. 100%. And very astute of you to see that part of it, Jesse, because for me, that's a big part of the whole kind of internal healing process as well as the creative process. They kind of go hand in hand for me. Because when I was 12 years old, I had this horrible pain. We were camping with my family out in the woods, and my brothers and all his friends were there, and I felt embarrassed to say that I was in pain, but it was excruciating, and it turned out it was from my period, but not normal. I had endometriosis, and quite severe, and it was outside of the normal organs that people think it affects. So for me, it was affecting my kidney and my bladder and a whole bunch of organs. Wow. And ligaments that you need to like walk and stuff. So it was misdiagnosed for a really long time, like mm-hmm. 30 years, basically. But from that age and onwards and through single parenting and trying to survive as an artist and trying to go to school, I had to learn how to deal with it. And one of the ways was not just, like when I say art helped save me, it's not just the art, I make the art, but as you say, it's the ritual associated with it. And the way that I do it, I collect leaves, I collect bark, I collect lichens, so part of going on the walk is part of the ritual, taking the photos while I'm doing it, and then cooking up the dye from those materials, taking the leaves, collecting recycled fabric and bits and pieces of metal that I make the metal salts from, is all kind of ritualistic. And in so doing, you know, like that's kind of like expressive arts. Mm-hmm. And I did go on to study at Langara expressive arts therapy in my development. And I was already a single parent. And people would ask me, like, how do you get through all, like, you've had so many surgeries and, like, waiting so long before you got diagnosed or treated? Like, how did you live? And I have to admit, there were times when I didn't want to keep living. And if they'd had made back in the day, I would have taken it. But I had to find a way. They didn't have made. And I did it by making art, and I would lose myself in the creative process. Like, a lot of artists talk about, they didn't even know how much time passed while they were making art, or they weren't hungry, or they didn't hear the phone ring, because you're taken away to a different place in your own mind. So that's kind of like tapping into the beneficial healing properties of the imagination. And because I had figured that out on my own, I went and studied expressive arts therapy so that I could help other people kind of like, well, how can that help you? If in our imagination we can have perseverating thoughts or just be re-traumatizing ourselves with memories that were difficult when they happened, but they're memories now, it's our imagination that power is held in. So equally, we can tap into that same power. And I mean, that's all art therapists or expressive arts therapists are helping people do, is tap into that beneficial quality of your imagination. It's not just make-believe. Anybody who talks about how they changed their lives, even from changing their life from addiction and going through rehab, you have to imagine yourself there.
Right. Positive self-talk or thought or whatever you're doing, you are using your imagination to think of the situation as differently from how it is.
Yeah. I mean, I was lucky and blessed enough to be able to do my practicum at Riverview when it was still open. And then as a practicing expressive arts therapist, I had clients on the Forensic Psychiatric Hospital in Cook William. And I mean, a lot of people think that these are kind of scary places, but I didn't find them scary at all. I found such a blessing and gratitude to be able to be somewhere where that modality was able to help people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, quite powerfully. I would go in to work with one client, and everybody else who was in the room, like in the common room, would gravitate over. I would have to carry other art supplies to make sure they had something to do, because I couldn't just turn them away.
Right.
'Cause they were just so attracted just by the material,
mm-hmm.
just by having art materials there. And I mean, during the pandemic, when everything was so dark for everybody, and for me, my international solo show was canceled. My Canada Council grant was pulled. They pulled all the international funding.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know what I was going to do. No more gallery shows. Everything was closed. I connected with a bunch of other artists. We were all trying to learn how to market ourselves online because we didn't know what to do. But what happened was we connected as friends, even though we lived all around the world. So now, for the last 2 years, I've been doing this project where we start a panel in our own style, And then we mail it to each other, and we do another layer on top. So in the end, there's six layers on one painting. And through doing this, we have really found like that power of creating art together, even though we're not in the same place. So there's that, the ritual and the making of art, and now we're joining forces, mm-hmm. and we're having to throw aside our egos, because working on someone else's art or having someone else work on your art is kind of taboo.
Totally. It makes me think of how writing can be very iterative, right? Like you write and you rewrite and you rewrite and you rewrite, and eventually it's in the shape that it needs to be. Whereas often, and I mean, I'm generalizing, of course, but in visual art, you might have a draft and then the sort of final version of it, but often it's just, you're just creating it. You make it
and then it's done.
Whereas in this new process you're describing, where you're putting a layer on, sending it to someone else for them to put it on, they're sending it on, it captures a little bit of that sort of like doing and redoing and refining,
yes.
and editing.
We actually, like, we call it the palimpsest project, mm. because palimpsest is like a document that's been rewritten and, you know, added to and changed, yeah. over time. It's called the Palimpsest Project Art and Beyond. You can find us on Facebook Live every Thursday at 12:30 p.m. Pacific and 3:30 Eastern. And we just share our process for a half an hour with people. It's called the International Art Alliance. We have a YouTube channel and a website and everything. But it's something that we did for ourselves that now we're sharing with others, because we've tapped into something really quite more powerful than we thought it was going to be. You know, we thought, oh, we'll do this art project. And now we're all kind of finding, like, it's helping us get through stuff, and we're looking forward to it, because we have somewhere to share this kind of common experience together. Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of, for me, reiterating that the healing in how art can make a connection. It's either when you're connecting, looking at my piece of art, just looking at it, and you feel something, and we have a connection. And this kind of connection collaboratively, and we're actually, when we finally have our show, we're looking for a gallery to mount it, we're going to be asking the viewers to give us titles, because our paintings are collaborative. We have painting A, B, C, D, and F. Even at this point, it's like, we don't want to have a big argument on what the title is, so we're just going to invite people to contribute to what they think the title should be.
Well, and I think that's appropriate, right? And I really like how, once again, with this project, it seems that the process is much more important than the end result, where it's very much about the collaboration and the act of doing. And